All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So welcome, everybody, to GraduCon. This is our 11th GraduCon. It's an annual event focused on career exploration. Today, we are going to be talking about careers in technology commercialization, and this panel will go until 10:20 Central Time this morning. So we have about 80 minutes for our panel, which is exciting. So before we get started, I just have a few things to run through. Let me see. All right, so here is the schedule for the rest of today. So we are in session one, which has four concurrent panels. So again, we're careers in technology commercialization. But we have an excellent lineup of panel topics for the rest of the day that we would encourage all of our audience members to consider joining, including our keynote. Our keynote is going to be really exciting. We have our new provost, Kai-Yi Lee, who is a chemistry faculty member, just got promoted to just became provost over the last couple of months. And she's going to be having a conversation moderated by two of our vice provosts. So highly recommend that you join us for the keynote and then consider joining for the panel sessions in the afternoon. We do have the GraduCon website listed on the bottom of this slide. So if you do want to check out the schedule and find the links to participate on Zoom for the other panel sessions, we encourage you to do so. Just some items of business as well for the how the webinar is going to work. So for those of you who are in the audience, if you do have a question for the panel, please go ahead and type that into the Q&A feature. We have it selected so that you can upvote the questions that you like the best. And then once about halfway through our panel discussion, we'll switch to taking those questions from the audience. So feel free to put those questions in the Q&A feature throughout the entire time. We should start that Q&A, as I mentioned, about halfway through. Now, if you do have any technical issues, please use the chat feature to notify me. I'm Brianna Connick. I guess I didn't actually introduce myself in the beginning. So I'm a UChicago grad staff member. So I'll be kind of in the background trying to do my best to assist with technical issues, but I am not an IT expert. So I will do my best. And so I would really love to just generally welcome, I'll let them introduce themselves, of course, but we have an excellent panel this morning for careers in technology commercialization with George Chalapa, Christy Frazier, Margaret Fleetwood, and Cole Johnson, with an excellent moderator of Steph Avalos-Bach. So before we jump into the panel discussion, the one other thing that I would like to do is just launch a quick poll, and this is for our audience. So please vote into the poll that I just launched to let us know if you are a master's student, PhD student, postdoc, alumni, or other, and then also what division you're a part of. So we'll let everyone answer that, and then I will end that poll in just a few seconds. And share it with everyone so that our panelists know who's actually in the audience today. All right, a few more seconds to vote. Okay, and I'm going to end it right about now. Okay, ending that and now sharing the results. So it looks like our biggest audience kind of community is PhD students, followed by postdocs and then master students. And we have several alumni in the audience, which is excellent. Welcome. In terms of division that everyone is coming from, the largest group is from the physical sciences division, followed by Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering. I mistyped that when I put it in the poll. And then biological sciences, and then we have a smattering from other divisions on campus, including the Harris School, a few from Booth, and social sciences. All right. So now we know kind of who's here. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here during this time. And at this point, I am going to hand over the conversation to Steph to start the panel discussion. And I'll be in the background if we have any questions.
Thank you, Bree. And thank you, of course, very much to all of our panelists this morning. And a special thanks to Bree and the Grad UConn team for doing a tremendous job moving this whole big event online. It was super easy for me and hopefully easy for our panelists to get to this point today. I'd like to start off by asking our panelists to introduce themselves with a focus on their academic background, what your PhD research was about, and sort of maybe a few thoughts on how you were thinking about your career while you were in graduate school and a postdoc, if you did one. And maybe we'll go down the line, Margaret, Cole, Christy, and then George. Those are the order you guys appear on my screen, so we can use that as just to get us started.
Rats, I lost that roulette. My name is Margaret Fleetwood. I did my doctorate at UPenn in cell and molecular biology. I'm currently an associate at McDonnell Bain and Hulbert and Berghoff. And while I was in grad school, I did some work with the tech transfer office at Penn, and that's how I got interested in the field. I got into it because I was interested in IP, but when I started working in tech transfer, I realized I enjoyed tech transfer for its own sake. So when I moved to Chicago, I kind of opened my field to tech transfer in addition to law-related positions, and I ended up working with the UChicago office for 5 years. And really loved that job and the people I worked with. So that's sort of the overview. Next.
That was me, right? I was next. Yeah, okay. So can everyone hear me? Can someone nod that they can hear me? Thank you, Margaret. So I'm Cole Johnson. So I did a master's and my PhD at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, master's in bioinformatics, and PhD in molecular, cellular, and developmental biology. I really just studied yeast genetics, looking at regulatory networks that would cause them to transition from sort of the safe commensal form to a pathogenic form. And I pretty much knew the whole time from the moment I started grad school, I wasn't going to stay in academia. So I was always looking for what the out would be. Probably like most people on the phone, consulting seems like a sweet gig. That didn't pan out for me, but in the process of trying to prepare myself for consulting, I ended up getting in contact with Ann Arbor's tech transfer office, where I was first introduced literally like 4 months before I was graduating. And so I basically left with a PhD looking for a tech transfer job, ended up at UChicago, where I worked with some of my favorite people in the world. At least three of them are on this call here, for, I guess, four years or so, roughly 4 years before moving into my current role at Baxter.
All right, can you hear me? I was muted. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Christy Fraser. I'm an assistant director in technology commercialization at the Polsky Center right now. I did my PhD in neurobiology at the University of Chicago, and I also knew early on that I didn't want an academic career in the long term. So I started looking around for other kinds of non-traditional jobs kind of early on. I didn't find out about tech transfer until pretty late in the game. I would say maybe like a year before I graduated. And I applied to a job at the tech transfer office at U of C, and I started there right out of my PhD. And I've been with the center for about 8 years with a 6 month rumspringa in science publishing. So I can talk a little bit about that if anyone is interested in science publishing as well. That's me.
Hi, everyone. I'm George Chilapa. I'm a manager in the tech commercialization group at the University of Chicago. I've been at the University of Chicago for just under 4 years now. Prior to coming to UChicago, I did a PhD at the University of Southampton in computational chemistry. This is in England. I got into a PhD because between my undergrad degrees and my PhD, I was teaching and I enjoyed teaching. So my original idea of doing a PhD was to go into teaching. So after I finished my PhD in England, I moved to the Johns Hopkins University to do a postdoc in computational biophysics, where I was looking at protein folding using Monte Carlo simulations. While doing a postdoc, I started looking for both teaching jobs and also other careers. And I met somebody from the TechCrunch office at Johns Hopkins who talked a little bit about what his role was. It was intriguing. And so while I was a postdoc, I started volunteering with Northeastern University in Boston to do some what's called tech assessments, evaluating their invention disclosures for both patentability and commercial landscape and what kind of write reports on the research around that. I found it interesting enough that I decided to explore this more. And so I moved from Johns Hopkins to Washington University in St. Louis to work in their TechCrunch office. And I was there for about 8 months when I saw an opportunity to move to the University of Chicago back in 2016. And I've been here since then.
Thank you all. I feel so fortunate to have this particular panel because all of you have worked in UChicago's tech transfer office, but also other ones. And so we're going to get to talk as we go on today about how our office is similar and different to other offices, as well as to other positions you've had. I know, Cole, you're either, I don't know if you finished your MBA maybe, but we have some folks with other degrees on the panel. Christy, your time in publishing is going to be really fun to hear about in a little bit. So I think it's really cool that it's not a, you know, like the story isn't you have to pick only one thing to do with your career. My mom went to law school in her 40s with two kids in middle and high school. And so that was also a great example for her to set of like, you can make changes and that's okay. And then today her career is kind of a mixture of her entire experience, which is really inspiring. I want to dig a tiny bit deeper before we go further on how each of you found tech transfer and what about it appealed to you. Instead of academia, instead of consulting, instead of other things that you were thinking about after graduate school. And feel free to bounce back and forth, argue, all that.
Go first, since I went first last time. As I briefly said, I found tech transfer mainly because I was interested in IP law and I was looking for a way to experience IP law while still in the academic setting to give myself better job odds. And when I was looking at the internship that I ended up taking, I was concerned that I was looking at essentially a sales job and that I would hate it. That's really how I saw it at first. And then when I started doing it, I realized, you know, first of all, I was naive. There's a difference between marketing and sales. I did not know that at the time. And I really liked, I mean, there's really two things about it. That I liked most. One of them is that you really see a lot of different activity in tech transfer, and because it tends to run on pretty lean margins, you get to do a lot of stuff yourself. You don't, you know, get a expensive hired gun for every aspect of it. You have to really dig in yourself, and there's a lot of different activities involved in it, which I'm sure we'll continue to talk about here. The second thing, and this can't be discounted, even if it sounds trite, but it's not an industry that's full of jerks, and that really matters for your day-to-day. You know, it's an industry that's full of clever people who have a sensibility around making the world better, working as a team. These are things that are really valuable. So, you can't discount how important that is when you're going to a job every day.
I'll take it. So my experience with it wasn't convinced necessarily I wanted to go the whole consulting route. And I had spent quite a long time in grad school, and it seemed if I was going to go somewhere, I wanted to be able to use the expertise that I had. And I thought, I also always thought sort of an innovation entrepreneurship position sounded pretty exciting, but I didn't really have like a strong pull towards starting my own company. Nothing really moved me to the point like I'm gonna really go do that and start my own company. So tech transfer really felt like, and I think we'll get to it, but it also depends on the structure of the tech transfer office, as a place where you get to leverage deep technical knowledge. Like I think to be, my personal opinion is that to be really good at it, to really like hit the ground running, you need strong scientific background. And you pick up the business marketing to some extent, I would say sales along the way. And so it was a way for me to leverage the skills I had trained myself in over grad school, but also learn a lot more that would make me a lot more useful and give me a lot more options. Because like my plan that I'm still executing on is like, hopefully by the time I'm 40, I'll know what I want to do with my life. But that gave me a lot more doors to like to try once I got through got trained in tech transfer. So I just seemed like a good way to learn a lot of useful skills. And so far that has carried itself to be true.
I can pick it up. I'll take the baton. So I was really interested in tech transfer because of the ability to help researchers who were working on science that could impact society. I was just excited about being in a role that could help science have impact. And there's lots of different ways science can have impact, but you know, one of them is through taking these early stage inventions and helping them kind of get out into the market or quote unquote real world and you know, become products and services that can benefit humanity. So I was really interested in that aspect of it, just from like a philosophical standpoint. Day to day, what I remember reading like a bio of someone who was in tech transfer in like science careers, and she said, every day is different. You just do so many different kinds of work, and it's dynamic and challenging and interesting. And I just thought, well, that's what I want to do. So that's what drew me to it. And it has turned out to be very, very diverse. It was kind of exactly like she described it. Every single day is different. And you're just moving through so many different kinds of tasks throughout the day. Which, you know, I was at the lab, you're often just doing the same thing over and over for like weeks and hoping that something happens and that you get a positive result. And you know, with tech transfer, it was like every day you're accomplishing something, every day you're feeling the reward of having completed something and got, you know, just getting something done. I found frustration in the lab with like constantly banging my head against the wall and feeling like my experiments weren't working out. So they eventually did because I graduated, but with tech transfer, you get, yeah, just rewarding. That aspect of the work is rewarding.
I can go next. And I think my answer probably is similar in that something that Margaret said, you get to work with people who aren't jerks. I think one thing I notice in tech transfer is I'm often picking up the phone or emailing people in other tech transfer offices, and their willingness to help is always impressive. And I think it's because there's no competition. I have a technology that I need some feedback on, and I can pick up anywhere in the US or the, outside a tech transfer office and email them and ask them, and they're always willing to help. So that's one thing that I enjoy. And to what Christy said, every day is different. Sometimes you deal with interesting faculty. Sometimes you're dealing with companies who can be challenging. And sometimes you're dealing with inventions that are challenging to wrap your head around. So every day is different, which I enjoy. And on a personal note, I like teaching. Part of why I like teaching is I like dealing with people. I like interacting with people. And in tech transfer, I do that every day. So that's another reason I like tech transfer.
That's a really fun, diverse set of answers. So continuing on that thread, just something Christy mentioned, what are all of the hats that each of you wear now? It's not just one, which it sounds like most or all of you like. And I want to dive into what all those are. What are the parts of your job?
Maybe I can take that and kind of talk a little bit about different kinds of tech transfer offices, because that might play well here with your questions. So in a cradle to grave tech transfer office, you wear many hats. You are as a licensing manager doing all of the pieces of tech transfer, which are invention intake and sort of evaluating inventions for patentability and commercial potential. You know, even before that is just establishing relationships with inventors so that they're disclosing their new ideas to the tech transfer office. Once you've decided to move forward with an invention, you are working with external counsel to patent and protect that invention. And so you're kind of, you're playing the hat of, you know, you're doing relationship management, you're doing science evaluation, you're doing patenting, you know, working with external counsel. Generally, we're not patent attorneys in the office, so you are working with external counsel who are experts in that. Then you're marketing the technology to either investors or industry partners, trying to find a partner who's going to take the technology and turn it into a product or service. And there's a whole lot of work around marketing and having calls with industry people. And then let's say you get you find a potential licensee who wants to license the technology. Then you're negotiating the business terms of that arrangement. You're negotiating financial terms and non-financial terms of licenses. You're getting into the nitty-gritty of the contracts. You're negotiating contract language once you've established business terms. And then you execute the agreement, everybody signs it, and then you're managing the relationship with that licensee after the license is signed. And I'll let my colleagues jump in if I've missed any pieces of it, if they have other comments, but that's that's kind of the cradle to grave model. And one person is responsible for all of that. Working with external counsel as appropriate. So you can see how it is so diverse. There are so many different kinds of work that you're doing. In a functionalized tech transfer office, there are groups with deep expertise and really are focusing on just certain pieces. And a given technology is going to be handled by many different people throughout the tech transfer process. So you'll have a kind of a front end group that works with the inventors and is focused on protecting the invention, evaluating and protecting the invention. Then you'll have a group that's focused on doing the deals, doing the licensing deals, and managing the relationships with the licensees, and kind of bridging that gap is another group that's focused on marketing and finding those partners. And then there's a lot of support, administrative support, there's so much data that needs to be managed. So you're generally not doing it, but that's kind of the functionalized model where you're not doing the entire tech, one person isn't taking care of all the tech transfer. So it depends on the office that you're in, how many different hats you wear. In some offices that are functionalized, you're still going to be wearing a lot of hats within one of those verticals, but you're not going to wear as many hats as you would in a cradle to grave office.
Hey, that's a good point to jump in and say you should be very thoughtful about the type of office. Like, if you want to do tech transfer, the type of office you choose needs to align with your expectations of the type of work you want to do. Because really, if you really boil it down, the decision is, do you want breadth or depth? And so if you know, like, you want to do IP law is really something you want to get an idea of, like, how do I feel about that? I want to really understand that. Then functionalized might make more sense, and you could go on the side that manages patents for a functionalized office. But if you really don't have a clue and you really want to wear, multiple hats simultaneously, then you should probably be looking for something that's a little more cradle to grave. And that's sort of the decision point you should know as you go in, and can help you frame the questions as you start talking to tech transfer offices. That's a show some understanding of the field to ask them their model of their office, and to understand, they may be specific, it may be explicit in the role, but just to understand what you're getting into. Because if you think you really want to negotiate licenses and manage those relationships, and you're applying for the patent side of the office, then you're probably going to be really disappointed that you're never negotiating a license. So think about that.
Just to add to what Cole said, I think personally, if I was asked, you know, 4.5 years ago, what I wanted to do within TechTrans, I would have said IT. But it, you know, now I prefer to do the contracting and the licensing part of my job as opposed to the IP side. So having experience on both, I think, helps you make a decision as you progress in TechTrans.
I think it's also important to note, and this is sort of a counterpoint, but not really. I think it's complementary. You know, in going into law, it was really helpful for me, and it made me an asset for some of my firm colleagues that I'd seen the client side and that I'd seen the other activities that the clients do. So, you know, if I'd been in a heavily functionalized model where I never got to do that side of it, I don't think I'd be as valuable now as an attorney on IP side. But I also, you know, coming into it, I didn't get as deep of experience drafting patents as I would have if I was in a functionalized office. So there's trade-offs either way. Mm-hmm. Personally, I prefer the breadth, but I think different employers and different employees may feel differently.
And that doesn't guarantee that if you go to a functionalized office, you're locked in to a particular role. Like, you know, depending on a lot of factors, including the culture of the office, if you don't think it's a fit for you, presumably you could, you know, move laterally into a new function if the opportunity presented itself. But if for entry level, I specifically chose an office, and they thankfully chose me to do something that had the full breadth and was cradle to grave, because I wanted the opportunity to try all of those things versus being stuck just dealing with patents, which frankly, I'm a little more in Georgia's camp on my preferences of areas I prefer to work in, IP versus sort of relationship and contract management.
On a personal,
I don't think we really.
So Polsky Center has been cradle to grave. We've been University of Chicago's Tech Transfer Office has been cradle to grave for the last 20 years, and is now moving to a functionalized model. So we've kind of had to think about, well, what would you really want to do? And actually, I really like, I want the faculty facing side. As you typically in a, you know, as you advance in your career in tech transfer, you do more and more deals. You're trying to get a deal sheet. And you do that and all, and it's, and I've just found, I miss the faculty. I miss working with them on the science now that I'm sort of more senior in my career and I do a lot of deals. I am excited about the opportunity to work more with the faculty on their science, like again, which is what I, you know, when you start out, that's what you're doing. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So, Steph, part of the question too was like what we do in our job. Did you want Margaret and I to talk to non-tech transfer hats that we wear now?
I would love that. Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead, Margaret.
Oh, thanks. Lob that one over. I think there should be like some sort of fist icon that pops up between the windows when people do stuff like that. That'd be kind of fun. So in terms of what we do now that's different, I think I'd like to open with this. I think one of the things that I understood theoretically when I switched to being an attorney but hadn't fully internalized is how much more solo I would be in my work in terms of being an attorney. I mean, I spend a lot of time now just me and a document, and I really like documents. But sometimes I do miss the interactive component, which I think is less, most attorney work is heavily document-based, so that's not surprising at all. But I mean, now I'm not doing the things that, you know, Christy and George are currently doing with, you know, calling people on the phone, trying to build like a long-term rapport in the hopes of having a license someday, those kind of things that are more nuanced. Relationship building is something that I think is really important in tech transfer and is less so in my day-to-day now. I mean, there's definitely relationship building, but not that same kind of long game, subtle, flexible relationship building that's true in tech transfer. And I do think that that's a fun aspect of tech transfer for sure. So I miss that. I don't miss any sort of combative interaction with either faculty or companies. That is a real, I mean, it was a rarity, but it happens sometimes in tech transfer, and that can be hard and it can be difficult emotionally. And, you know, IP law is drier, like it's more factual. So it's, there's less emotion wrapped up in it. So it's a little bit different in that way. So ups and downs on both sides.
Yeah, I think, and also, I mean, when we were in tech transfer, we always blame the attorneys anyways if we get into really bad straits. So we just point the finger back at Margaret now.
Yeah, liability offloading is a real thing. And it's kind of interesting to be on the other side of that. I'm too junior right now to really sustain blows on that front, but I still see it, you know, transpiring. But that's okay. That's part of what we're paid for. So
yeah, that's fair. So I think one of the, a good distinction of where I was versus where I am now, when I went to Baxter, I joined, and I recently changed roles, but when I joined for a little over a year, I was in tech assessment and scouting, which I'll explain that briefly, but what I actually sort of did functioning was switch to the other side of the table. So in tech transfer, you have to manage the IP, but if you file IP, your grand scheme is that you're going to license it so it goes from the lab to be a product on the market that people buy and add benefit to society. And so in tech transfer, you're really selling stuff. Now in industry, the role I had was early stage innovation, and I'm on the buy side now, which is, I mean, frankly, it's a lot more fun. A lot more people want to talk to you when you have, they presume you have a checkbook in your pocket. I did not, but they still thought I did. And I sort of had a very implicit connection to one. And so when I went to Baxter, I sort of wore two hats in this innovation role where I looked externally, including universities, but more later stage startups for technologies that met the needs of any of Baxter's six business units. And if there was interest from a business unit and they wanted to move forward with a venture investment or a partnership of some kind, more pure acquisition, I led a cross-functional team that did technical due diligence on that opportunity. And everything I did in tech transfer was useful for that role. And so surprisingly, it was probably not my favorite, but the IP side is still today in my new role is something I get called on quite a bit to add some insight into interpreting IP, despite the fact the company has many, many, many IP attorneys. I help speed that process up because I have that tool set on hand when I need it. And so my new role is a little different from that, and I'm in a particular GBU, but it's still exploratory innovation and vetting and helping build business cases around new technology or new products for the company. And I would not have had this job without my tech transfer background for sure. I'm also seeing a lot of questions pop up. I don't know, Steph, how we want to, some of them all tie together in a single story. I'm not sure
how we want to approach them. In not too long. If there are aspects of questions though that are relevant to something you're speaking about, feel free to touch on those things too. I'm wondering if one or a couple of you, for the sake of time, could talk about a favorite project you've worked on. And my goal here is to shed some light on the different roles in the tech commercialization process. So obviously there's our fantastic folks in the tech transfer office. There's also faculty members. There are outside corporations. I'm probably missing some. Could one of you take us through the process and help explain what the different people involved do?
Okay, I have one that comes to mind. I have a few that come to mind. I'm thinking of a deal that I did and what the asset was. And it was a little different. It was different, which is why I liked it. It wasn't your typical patent license. It was a phage display library for making recombinant antibodies. So it's a tangible property asset. And you know, you usually think about tangible property as these are research tools, or they usually don't make a lot of money, and they maybe don't have, yeah, they just generally are not thought to have a lot of value. But this library was kind of known in the circles to be really good at producing therapeutic candidates and our researchers had always like used it basically to generate tool compounds. They hadn't used it to generate therapeutic candidates. And so there was a company that was interested in accessing it to generate therapeutic candidates. And the faculty member, you know, we were just kind of unsure how it was all going to work, how this deal was, what it was going to look like, because it's not a typical IP license with typical financial structure. And so it was a process to work with the company to figure out what those financial terms should be. And I think the reason I really really liked this particular deal was because the people on the other side, I had already had a relationship with the person doing the negotiation, because she worked in tech transfer previously before moving into industry. And so we just had like a mind meld, and it was really easy to negotiate a deal that we all felt good about. And that was, the inventor was very happy about too. And so it was good from that. It was just a great, if you can do deals with other people who are like reasonable and they, you know, like if I was doing a deal with Cole, I know it would be great. I know we'd all walk away feeling like, this is good. We're all happy with how this ended up. So the different hats there were really managing the faculties, because you're negotiating on their behalf. Basically, they get a share of the revenue. So kind of managing their expectations, making sure that they're satisfied with the results that you're getting through the negotiation. And that can be very complicated. There can be so many factors. But this one was relatively, I'm just thinking of all the different ways that things can get crazy. You deal with a lot of difficult situations, and this one was just like really smooth, great. and the faculty was happy. I'll stop there.
Real quick, Christy, what is the faculty member's role? Obviously, they come to the tech transfer office and disclose their invention, and then what happens after that as far as their involvement?
Well, if it's a patentable asset, we work with them on patenting. They typically provide input into the patent. We'll ask them specific questions, and so they'll be involved there. There'll be different points in patent prosecution where we'll need their technical insight. Like it can get very nitty gritty, as Margaret can speak to. It can get very nitty gritty, and you really need someone who can like point to sequences and in a patent application. So we work with them on that. And then during marketing, we ask maybe to review our marketing materials, just help them feel like they're, it's not just us like getting a gut check, but we want them to be involved in the process of, you know, here's how we're representing your technology. And then once we find companies that are interested, they get on calls, they talk with the companies. Once we're in negotiations, where most faculty, they're kind of like, you guys just quit and let me know what is happening. They don't want to be necessarily involved in every negotiation call. They just kind of want to know what's happening. And so we keep them briefed on, you know, how the negotiation is going. And then afterwards, you know, once the technology is licensed, you know, faculty want to make sure that the companies are actually developing the technologies, that they're actually bringing something to market. And so we get progress reports from the companies. There are certain diligence milestones that they have to meet. And so we're talking with the company about, or with the faculty about, you know, how is it going with this technology? How is the company making progress? Anybody can jump in with, I probably missed some stuff. So if anybody has any comments.
That was great, Christy.
No, that was great. That was really helpful. I'm going to ask one more question and then we'll jump to the Q&A. One of my questions that was on my list was how you use your PhD and your research background. And I'm seeing elements of that in the Q&A, so we'll save that one for just a few minutes from now. But my last question would be to ask, I think all of you, how your experience now compares and contrasts to your work in other, either other tech transfer offices, or for you, Christy, in publishing briefly. I'm curious what you feel is unique about UChicago's, and in general, what are sort of the things that change between one school's tech transfer office and another that students and postdocs should be thinking about as they sort of look around the job market?
I can speak a little bit to Penn's tech transfer office, at least how it used to be set up versus UChicago's. I mean, one thing that I think is very interesting, I mentioned like nuanced relationship management. I feel like that defines my experience working as a UChicago project manager in general. And just the idea of information gathering and figuring out what actually needs to be done, navigating that ambiguity, particularly in a place that's not very hierarchical and is extremely consensus-based, can be a very interesting game. I think that one thing that was different at Penn was things were just sort of run much more on rails and less so creatively, I would say. You know, every workplace has a different culture for sure. And I think Penn's is set up in a way that's very, you know, this person's in charge. If you don't know what to do, ask this person, they'll just tell you. And I don't feel like UChicago is set up that way. It's much more kind of feel your way around, figure out. One hat that I don't know that anyone's explicitly mentioned, but they have implicitly, is the politician's hat. And I think the politician and advocacy hat is extremely important in the UChicago environment compared to other places I've worked. And that's fun. It may not be for everyone, but I certainly think it's fun. And those are kind of vague realities of culture, but I do think they manifest in a very real way, especially in an industry that touches as many different parts of campus as tech transfer does.
I can talk a little bit about WashU's tech transfer office. So they do have some functionalization, but the functionalization is less pronounced than, say, what we are moving towards here at the University of Chicago. But what they did have was what I would call verticals. So each individual had a focus area of certain departments that they were in charge of. And that had obviously some pros and cons. The pros I saw was that, let's say you focused on the radiology department, you did get to know all of the faculties and the relationship between the faculties and the subtle differences in the research that each of them did. It also gave you an opportunity to build deep expertise in a space and get to know the companies that are involved. So that's a pro. The con that I can think of is possibly you do get siloed in certain departments. So, you know, it's a trade-off between different offices that choose this path or not.
You want me to touch on publishing? There's just a little to say about it, really, which is that it, for me, it wasn't as diverse as tech transfer. It was a lot of the same every day. And I think that's what, even though it was, I guess I thought, you know, be reading different papers every day and there, you'll find diversity through that. It wasn't quite enough. The kind of work that I was doing every day was, it was the same. It was so routine. And it was in Boston and I missed Chicago. So if you're thinking about careers in publishing, yeah, I would just, you know, you're sometimes people are weighing these two, publishing versus tech transfer, and you know, think about what just kind of your work style. Do you want to go really deep and do kind of, you know, just get really good at turning the crank on something like peer review, or and that whole process? I mean, there, I think what's very similar between those two, between tech transfer and publishing, is difficult situations. I think that in both, you're going to deal with stressful, difficult situations. So if you like that, you'll find that in either career. But the just the nature of the work is a lot more routine, at least it was for me in publishing.
If you're considering different spaces within this ecosystem, I'd like to follow up a little bit on something Cole said. I think one thing I didn't really think about is relative positions within the ecosystem. Cole mentioned the buy versus the sell side. Like, being on the buy side can be nice because, like, people are always like courting you and trying to be on your good side, which is interesting. Being on the sell side is a little different. There's a couple ways to be on the sell side. Now I'm on the sell side with folks in an industry where people assume that you have a lot of money and you're a jerk, which is kind of interesting. I think being on the sell side for a university was, which is what you are doing in tech transfer. You're on the sell side. You're not a, you know, a showy salesperson, but you're definitely trying to get somebody to put money toward your assets. And you know, the audience you're dealing with generally knows that you don't have a ton of money yourself and that you don't have, you know, a ton of resources at your disposal, as most academic, you know, technologies don't. But everyone wants to be on a university's good side. So it's interesting to think about those politics. Like, you know, when you're a tech transfer person, you're kind of the little guy. People assume you're really smart. People assume you are coming from a good place. And so that gets you a certain amount of treatment, even if you don't have a lot of assets at your disposal. So it's there's a lot of, I don't know if Cole experiences different kind of politics of being on the buy side, but it's certainly interesting to think about like where you fit and the spaces you're welcome in the jobs you might have.
Yeah, I mean, the key is it's on the industry side, it really is going to vary with the organizational architecture of the company and your role in it. Everyone assumes that me and colleagues, when we show up at meetings, that they want to talk to us because they're looking for money. It's almost always money, but we'll say some type, they're looking for resources. We'll say that at a higher level. And they assume we have direct control over those resources. Most of them do, which isn't true. We're more of a first pass liaison to the, at least the role I used to have, to the GBU, who actually has real money, R&D money to spend on something like that. You know, they're open the door to us until it gets down to the details, and then they kind of, they could be less interested in it. But they know they can't walk away because we're supposed to be the gatekeepers in that sort of role most of the time. So it's enjoyable, but you get a lot of emails. I mean, I used to be the person in a tech transfer office sending non-confidential disclosures to people, and now I get a lot of them. Even after changing roles, I still have a lot of universities that email me on these disclosures of new technologies and want to know, is Baxter interested? Which actually I think would be a good way. How do I think my Q&A is? I think it's a really good way to go into some of these questions, because there's a group of them I kind of want to call out together, and it's the one: what skills do you think are most important? Is PhD preferred? And what skill sets did you learn as a PhD that you can bring successfully to a transfer job? I'll answer them in some random order of those three. So the first one is, I think a PhD is at nowadays, I think when I started, when Christy started, when Margaret started, definitely not the case. It wasn't preferred. Master's probably, and an advanced degree was preferred. I think now the field is so in high demand. I think there are, if you get the choice, you would want a PhD. And the reason is, presumably as part of your PhD career, there are at least two things you've learned to do well, and that's to understand technical information and then communicate it across a room to people that may not have technical background. And so it's really a level of communication that people without advanced degrees probably can't do or can't do well or quickly. And so that's sort of like the explicit thing that you would need to be able to do, and hopefully you're being trained to do that. Because it doesn't matter what your field is, you should be able to take what you've done and give your own elevator pitch and defend it in a dissertation. Hopefully all of you get to that point too. The sort of implicit thing that a PhD offers, and this may not carry across all, is that when you're sitting in front of a faculty member who is a clinician researcher, MD, PhD, them knowing, I have been in a room with them and they have been pretty derogatory towards me until they're like, oh, you have a PhD too, well, let me approach this differently. And nothing really changed other than that person's understanding. But when you're dealing with faculty at research institutions that went through similar things as you, and they start to respect that you can understand the words that are coming out of their mouth when they're more than three syllables, it helps that level of relationship a lot, in my opinion, as well. So there's sort of that implicit ability. And then what, I'm not sure if your PhD gives you this, but it's in my experience where I don't say I like it, but it's something I think I'm competent at, as I know everyone else that I've worked with that's on this call is you live constantly in this bubble of ambiguity. And if you are not comfortable dealing with crazy fire drills, things you probably have never seen before, but someone has to deal with it, on the university side or the industry side, it's going to be, you're not going to like it. So you really need to make sure you're comfortable dealing with ambiguity. And I can't confidently say you'll get that as a PhD student. So I don't want it to answer that question, but skills that are important for tech transfer, you definitely have to be able to deal with ambiguity.
I think that's super important to note. One follow-up on, in Cole saying that having the doctorate gives you the opportunity to be able to do the level of communication that you need. I agree with that. I would add that there's still a secondary filter. There's plenty of PhD holding people who cannot communicate the way tech transfer people do. I think we've all seen them. And I cannot, amplify enough the whole thing on ambiguity. I think it's interesting in talking to almost all of our UChicago diaspora of tech transfer alums, they all talk about their new role and how so many people in their new role cannot navigate ambiguity in the way that their former colleagues could. I know that's true for me. I know it's true for Cole and other colleagues. Like, it's really shocking how good you get at just deciding with almost no information and having to be comfortable. You got to be comfortable. It's like, it's tricky, and you recognize that you'd like to have more information, but you ain't going to get it. So try and find a way to move forward, because you can't just tread water. So it's, I think that's a fantastic skill for life in addition to work. So no regrets on having picked that one up, but it's certainly true that a lot of people in a lot of industries just simply don't have it.
You guys say lacking information. What does that mean?
Navigating ambiguity.
Yeah, what's some of the information you wish you had but you couldn't get?
I mean, the easiest one, there's a lot, but the easiest one, and others should jump in, but I mean, the easiest one is more data on a given technology. In many cases, you're dealing with really early stage stuff, so it'd be nice to have more data. Generally, you don't. I think also you're dealing with a lot of situations where people's reactions are going to be kind of unknowns. You know, you're taking a lot of political risks, both on the industry side and on the faculty side a lot of the time in making these decisions, because often choosing one door eliminates another. So that can be tricky. I'll stop there. There's got to be a bunch of others.
Well, I think it's important to distinguish. There's how you personally, deal with it yourself. There's the internal, manifestation of how you handle ambiguity. If it causes you a lot of angst, that's one thing you have to figure out how to manage. The other thing is, how do you act? What's the action you take in the ambiguity is a whole nother thing. So the people that will sit there and just swirl. And so there's both that you're potentially inaction and it's just causing anxiety because you don't know what to do, so you take no action. Really, the most, key thing to take away is be ready to take action. It may just be simply reach out to these three people, but that lack of data, it doesn't mean the data doesn't exist. It could be you don't have the data, just isn't there. As like a, you know, explicit example in tech transfer, we'll get a disclosure that, you know, for whatever reason, we have a relationship with a faculty member. We believe in what they're doing. We think the science is there, but it is a weird niche market that we can't find good data. That's like, if we spend the money to file on this, do we think we could get that back in the licensing deal? And if the market would accept it, is it the right time for the market to then take this and make a product out of it? And so we may not be able to get that data. And so you have to be comfortable and be able to stand in a room with your peers and be like, I'm going forward with this and this is why. And ideally you take action and try to get some data that to help support it. But sometimes you might have to take a flyer on something sometimes. And you have to be comfortable with that sort of situation. And so it's not just how you deal with ambiguity internally, which is important because it'll reflect outward if it causes you a lot of turmoil. It's what do you do in response to that ambiguity? And there are a lot of people that just sort of throw their hands up. It's like, they just go with their gut. And if you're like a 40-year-old executive or someone that has 20 years tech transfer experience, your gut's probably a lot more tacit knowledge than just you winging it. But if you're an entry level in tech transfer, your gut, that's not going to fly. So.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, George.
I wanted to add that in a PhD, you are dealing with ambiguity. And one of the questions I just wanted to go back to was, if you are thinking of tech transfer, a good place to start is just looking at tech transfer jobs. Most of these entry-level jobs probably are called licensing associates. Look at those and see what the requirements are. And it's all about pitching the skills you've picked up in your PhD slightly tweaked, right? So, you know, it may ask for communication skills. All PhDs have a lot of experience standing in front of posters, standing in front of audiences and presenting. So it's about selling yourself. You have to tweak your resume to sell what they're asking. And I always encourage people to, you know, spend an afternoon writing down all of the things that they're asking in a licensing associate jobs and then seeing what have I done this in my PhD or postdoc. And you'd be surprised that you do have all of those skill sets. It's just tweaking your resume to match what their licensing associate jobs are asking for. That's a skill that you build up over time. You know, a resume is not going to be perfect first time around. So you're going to be tweaking it all the time. So.
Yeah, I would just.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt. Sorry, Christine.
I think that's great advice, George. I think having some kind of internship experience is also really valuable, even just writing marketing summaries. Those are, it's useful to show that you know what tech transfer is, maybe you've done a little bit of in an office. But even absent that, I had no experience in tech transfer and getting, you know, doing pretty much exactly what George just described and thinking about how do I write a resume that can communicate that I've learned what I needed to learn in my PhD in order to pick up tech transfer. I wanted to emphasize, I think coming back to this idea of ambiguity, Cole's point about, you know, when you're an associate, your gut's not really gonna fly. I think that's a good one. I think that's true. I think as you are in tech transfer longer, you're still gonna encounter situations that you have never seen before. Like the example of the tangible property license. We've never done anything like that before. And you have to be able to be comfortable. You're just making decisions a lot. In a cradle-to-grave office, as a licensing manager, you're making decisions every day that are going to impact the university's intellectual property portfolio. And so being able to be comfortable making decisions without all the information that you would like is really the crux of being able to deal with ambiguity. things are going to come up on a docket, for example, you can't ignore them. You've got to decide, am I killing this patent? Am I keeping it alive? What are the political ramifications? You know, you're agreeing to terms of a faculty member's intellectual property. You've got to be able to justify why you've agreed to those terms. And so you're making decisions about what you're going to agree to, and you've got to think about the political implications and the rationale behind it, even if you don't have all the information, even if you've never done a deal like this before. So
Sorry, Christy. I think just to follow up on Christy's continued discussion of ambiguity, I think another thing that tech transfer people recognize that a lot of people don't is that to not decide is to decide, because a consequence is coming your way. And whether you take responsibility for a redirect or you don't, you know, in some cases you may want that default consequence and maybe you don't want to have to take as much political responsibility for it, so you let the default happen. Sometimes that's a strategy, but sometimes you want to redirect, and if you don't proactively move things, then you have decided, even if you want to say you haven't. So I think that's something that comes up constantly.
So the top question, which I think we've addressed it to some extent, is how do you become familiar enough with the field to apply and succeed in interviews for your first job in tech transfer? So it boils down to what George is saying. It's telling a story. You have to be able to tell your story. You don't have to have tech transfer experience. Most of us, well, me and Christy didn't coming into this, but that doesn't mean I didn't tell a story that made it seem that I did a lot of things in my past that set me up perfectly for this tech transfer job. And so there are things you can do for personally, I had done things with the business school at Michigan in some case competitions in healthcare and early stage innovation. I had accidentally got involved in iCorps at Michigan because they had just started while I was finishing up my PhD there. And so the story I told was that I did those things in a linear fashion that led to the culmination of me knowing what I want to do as tech transfer. And that's not a lie. I just didn't pursue them at the time in that particular, it wasn't linear in the process I pursued them. But the story I told during the interview was that it was to prepare me for tech transfer, because that's true, it did. And in hindsight, it was a little more linear. But looking forward, I mean, I still don't know what I'm doing with my life. So, I mean, to look forward, it's a squiggly line and a knot. But looking back, you have to, anywhere you sit, you have to tell that story that tees up, like, these are things I have done that make me a good fit for this role and should convince you that even if the skills aren't, or the experience may not be what you thought, this is why it makes me a good fit for the role. Now, to be familiar with this field, I think there's a lot of material out there that could let you do that. There's also internships, and then there was another question George can address about volunteer opportunities. Those aren't always gonna be published. Well, neither are internships. Michigan actually did a pretty good job, which is why the only reason I found out is they sent a blast out for an internship to all grad students to help write non-confidential summaries. That's how I learned about tech transfer. If they had not done that, I wouldn't know anything about it. I don't know what I would be doing right now. Probably living in a van down by the river or something. So that's to say, if you took an active, there are a lot of tech transfer offices, as Margaret mentioned, that are probably either understaffed or underfunded and could use some experience or some people to do some work for them, like write summaries. They may not advertise it, but reach out to tech transfer offices. I assume, I mean, most people will be reaching out to people like Christy because you're probably local here. But if you're back home for whatever reason and it's a local tech transfer office, ask them if you could do some work for them, like write non-confidential summaries. If they don't have to pay you, they're probably a lot more eager to probably work with you. And that's a good experience that could either lead to a paid role or at least give you experience to talk about when you're applying for a job at another office.
I can add something there. So the Northeastern job, that I don't know whether it exists now. So the way I found that was I just emailed tech transfer directors and said, hey, I'm a postdoc. I'm looking to gain experience. I think the biggest hurdle people face in getting tech transfer is, why tech transfer? You want to convince a tech transfer team that you're not applying for this job because you couldn't get a job in academia or you couldn't get a job in industry. So I think that's an important step of showing some interest, that you've done some work, you actually are interested in this role. So if you're back home, I would just encourage everyone to write to Tech Transfer directors and see if there are opportunities. In addition, there are some Tech Transfer offices that have full-time programs that are fabulous. The National Cancer Institute and the NIH both have fellowships in Tech Transfer that are 2 years, I believe, that are worth looking into. The Moffitt Cancer Center in Florida also has a Tech Transfer program that they open to outside of Moffitt. WashU's program was open to outsiders. That's how I got in. But I would start with your own Tech Transfer office. That would be the first place to start and see if you can volunteer, right? And to Cole's point, if you are willing to do some work for free, most Tech Transfer offices would welcome it. But those opportunities aren't advertised. And again, it's a timing thing too. Mm-hmm. Northeastern University, when I applied, had no one with strong science skills. They were all more in the law side. And so they just needed someone to write these things. So it was just timing, but I think I would just encourage people to write to Tech Transfer office directors and ask for opportunities.
Let's maybe jump down to this third question here about the gender ratio in the industry. And I'm curious for those of you who aren't still at UChicago's office, for you, Cole and Margaret, how does this play in outside companies that interact with the Tech Transfer office, especially at a company like Baxter that's looking at a lot of outside technologies?
I mean, it's all, I have a plurality of anecdotes. I don't know if it's data for what the gender ratio is. I would say it feels like it's slightly leaned towards female, but probably only 55 to 60. So it feels somewhat evenly split, but a slight lean would be my experience with the Tech Transfer office I've worked with. I'd say the ones that are more, actually, I definitely can say 100% of the fact, the ones I've worked with, particularly in the Boston area, that the more female involvement, the more, the better the relationship is. But that's also a correlation, not causation, I guess. But I've been Googling because I saw that. I don't know if, I would like to think there's some publications on that or some data, but I'm not finding it because the field, Tech Transfer is not a huge field. And so I don't know if anyone specifically done, George might know. I don't know. I don't think Autumn, who is like the trade organization for the field, has done any, has published on the gender ratio or not.
I think they did back in 2018.
Okay. I'm trying to find that. So that's all I got to that question. I think it's slightly lean, but I'm sure the data is there. I just have to find it.
George, do you think it's about 50-50 from what you remember?
Yes, I think it's slightly more female than male.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly more equal in that regard than IP law. I can tell you that much.
And how would you all say Tech Transfer as an industry rates on things like quality of life, family leave, work-life balance, things like that? How does it compare to other fields that these students or postdocs might be considering?
The work relative to publishing, the work-life balance is better. The quality of life is better. So I can only speak to those two really, because that's it's a way better work-life balance than grad school. I can definitely say that too. Yeah.
Margaret, do you find the work-life balance different now as an associate from Tech Transfer?
So it's a little bit interesting because I think the work-life balance is better in Tech Transfer than it is in law, but in like when I've been working strictly as an associate, things are a lot more flexible because, as I said, if I'm just sitting in front of a document, I can do that whenever. If I disappear from an office for 2 hours in the middle of the day, nobody cares because nobody's on the phone with me or whatever. And Tech Transfer, I always found there to be a lot more, especially as I got more senior, there was a lot more pressure to be live at specific times. And academics don't keep long business hours generally where they want to be on the phone, right? Like faculty are not wanting to get on the phone with me at 7 p.m. They want to get on the phone with me at 2 p.m. So I got to be there at 2 p.m. You know, whereas when I'm working on documents, I can be anywhere. I can decide to quit for the afternoon and pick it up again in the evening. With tech transfer, I found I was a lot more constrained just because I had to be live.
I think that's it's a hard question to answer other than what our few experiences have been, because I think it's going to vary by the structure and culture of the place that you work, whether it be academia in a tech transfer office or in sort of early stage innovation and tech commercialization in industry. I have found them to be roughly the same, but there are times where they both just suck for the amount of workload that they have, and there's times where, you know, you get a nice pandemic and things slow down a little bit. So it just sort of depends on the situation. I've been happy with both situations, but there are obviously there are instances in time where I'm just like, this is terrible, FML. But on average, over time, the curve kind of flattens out, and I find them to both be the same. But I think that could differ from office to office, and I have a deep sensitivity to office culture and the impact that makes on quality of life. Mm-hmm. And I have only gotten more sensitive over time. And so my I guess, little bit of advice is that as you interview for roles like this, make sure you're interviewing enough of the office and not just senior members so that you really get a feel for what the culture is like and the way people work together. Because it doesn't matter how much you like the day-to-day stuff that you do. If you can't work well with the people you work with, it's going to suck. It's going to suck pretty quickly. So make sure you fit in.
I think one thing, working at the firm and working with other tech transfer offices, the UChicago tech transfer office works harder and is more conscientious than I think almost any other I've seen. And I mean, it sounds bad working harder, but actually I thought it was fun. Like I always felt like everyone else was in it with me. I wasn't like, I worked long hours. Sometimes I'm surprised by my firm colleagues are like, oh, your life must be so much harder now. And I was like, no, actually I worked really hard when I was in tech transfer. And I, you know, I felt like people asked a lot of me and I asked a lot of them, and it was hard. So not all tech transfer offices are that way. A lot of folks are kind of, they have more rigorous roles and they're clocking in and clocking out at specific times. The UChicago office is definitely not like that. And as Cole said, every office is very different.
We've got one more question in the Q&A and about 7 minutes till we have to wrap for the next panel. But maybe one or two of you could talk about tech commercialization roles outside academic tech transfer, and then we'll go around real quick for a final word to the audience.
I'll start off with this one. So the biggest thing that's different, and keeping in mind where I'm at is like a 10,000 person organization that's global, is that everyone has a particular role. Whether or not they do a good job, that's a whole nother conversation for another time. But everyone gets defined roles. So tech commercialization in industry is sort of split into there's the in-house attorneys that manage the IP. And then there's the people in R&D that are the inventors, and they work closely on tech commercialization, and it's that it's organic growth, so in-house development. That's really where tech commercialization centers in Baxter. They're still very, we're getting better, but it's still very developed here, organic, our own R&D organizations own it. I didn't work that much with them from that tech commercialization role. And Baxter, unlike some of our peers, we don't do a lot of out licensing of our technology, which means we don't take stuff we've patented and license it to other companies or startups. As a matter of fact, I don't think we do that at all. So some organizations, I think AbbVie has a group that does that. J&J does that. And so that would be a little more in line with what you see in university, is that out licensing play that or do something with IP. Where I sat was trying to bring stuff in to do in licensing, which is why I was saying I was more on the buy side. And so I'm trying to find university or technologies or spin out some universities that are developing things, and then develop a relationship with them to align them with the business units in our company and the needs for the products they want to develop. manage that relationship. And if it everything lines up, we would then start to partner with them to develop whatever their technology or product is to something you take to market. I think the tech commercialization will vary, and it could just be, you'll see, even on the, I sent around, hopefully everyone got a link to the Autumn Career Center. You'll see roles there that are like license management for like Abby and Abbott tend to have roles like that, where you're negotiating licenses with usually universities or someone outside the external party that has IP. That could fall under that role as well. And it's sort of just, are you talking about sending technologies out and licensing them or bringing them in and licensing them? But everyone has very particular roles, and mine was just to bring, it sort of is, but it's to bring stuff in and then help vet early stage technology. So it's a lot less, it sounds like it's a lot more narrow of a amount of work, but I would challenge that notion. It's still a lot of random stuff that there doesn't seem to be people to do certain things, and so you end up doing it. So again, ambiguity, you have to figure out how you're going to deal with it.
Great, and for our last couple of minutes, could we just go around real quick for final thoughts, final advice for students and postdocs?
I'll start, and I will mostly amplify something George said earlier. In terms of getting yourself into a role, I mean, I can't emphasize enough how hard the resume process is and how diligent you have to be about targeting that resume to what you're looking for. I mean, a lot of people, when they're applying for tech transfer jobs, they're also applying for other kinds of jobs that might use similar skill sets. As George said, definitely don't make tech transfer your backup. That's not going to fly now. People, you know, have a story around why you want to do tech transfer, not just, I didn't get a job at McKinsey. Nobody likes that. But, you know, have a master resume and then pull the relevant pieces into individual one pagers that you deploy when you're applying. I mean, I think for both my husband and I, my husband is at BCG. That was a critical exercise for both of us. And we spent days at the end of grad school doing that and looking at each other's resumes to make sure we had polished stories for each individual opportunity. I can't emphasize enough how important that is.
I can go next. Just to add to what Cole sent around, the Association of University Technology Managers is a great resource. It's a professional organization for people in tech transfer. Not just looking for jobs, but they also have lots of webinars and resources that you can look into. Because when you go into tech transfer interviews, people might ask, oh, what's a patent? Or, you know, how long does a patent last? And you don't want to be saying, oh, I don't know. So it's a great place to start. There's lots of resources out there, but I think Autumn collects those resources and presents it in a way to easy to use. So I would encourage checking out Autumn as well.
And for anyone who didn't see, Cole dropped a link to that in the chat below. So that's AUTM, Autumn, and definitely check that out.
Also, since just posted some links of a few fellowships that are sort of in the innovation, entrepreneur, and a little bit of policy space that I track that could get some experience. They all are going to have their own prerequisites, but just other opportunities that, in addition to what George mentioned about the NCI and a few others out there. I still think it all boils down to being able to tell your story and what have you done to date that proves that your story is not full of crap, basically. So good luck with that. Also, feel free to connect on LinkedIn and follow up if there's other questions. I'm happy to help later. I don't use any of the Snapchat or TikTok or whatever these kids are using nowadays.
I use TikTok, but you probably won't find me on there. But I do like to laugh at TikTok. I don't have too much to add to what Margaret and George and Cole have already said about being able to tell your story, other than to say, look for the places where you've shown leadership in your PhD or through your volunteer experience anywhere where you've done where you can say you had a leadership role. It could be something you managed a process in the lab. You were responsible for something, that was critical to your lab's function. And just an example, I think I said I worked at a radio station. I volunteered at a radio station, and my leadership experience there was volunteering as a promotions director. Not tech transfer related at all, but I do think that being able to say that I did something, there were other things, but that was one of them that I think, you know, it doesn't have to be tech transfer related. And yes, you have a story to tell. You're probably like, oh, I don't know what my story is. You got a story. If you want to talk about what your story is, you can reach out to me. I'll talk about your story. So thanks.
All right. Well, thank you so much, panelists. Thank you, Steph, for moderating the discussion today. And thank you for the audience members and excellent questions for our Q&A. So thank you. I did just put into the chat that we are encouraging all of our panelists to use Wiser, but feel free to connect on LinkedIn or otherwise. All right.
Thank you all so much. This is great.
Thank you all very much. Have a great rest of your Friday.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.
Take care. Bye.
Good luck, everyone.